You're listening to KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary opened back in 1934, and when it finally closed its cell doors for the last time in 1963, 1,538 prisoners had served time on the Rock. And throughout the prison's 29-year history, there was an average of one guard for every three prisoners. Today, there are only four or five surviving Alcatraz prison ex-cons and about four surviving guards. And of the many members of the clergy who saw duty on the Rock, the only remaining former clergyman alive today is Father Bernard Bush. It was curiosity about the mysterious island penitentiary in the middle of the San Francisco Bay that first attracted Father Bush's attention, and the young seminarian decided to volunteer his services on Alcatraz back in 1958. I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me on Alcatraz Island, administered today by the National Park Service, for a visit with Father Bush as he vividly shares his recollections from his 4 years service on the Rock.
Think about you every day. Well, you know, I'm out on this old bird island.
My name is Father Bernard Bush, S.J. I'm a Jesuit priest.
So you go formally by Father Bernard?
Yeah, I go by Father Bush.
Oh, Father Bush.
Yeah, okay. We go Father Bush. Okay. And, but you know, my friends call me Bernie.
Okay.
So I'm in retirement now, officially, at the Jesuit Retirement Center in Los Gatos. But I still have a part-time job at the retreat house in Los Altos. So I go there several days a week and continue to do some spiritual direction and counseling and maintain a little bit of a job outside the retirement center.
Back in the day when you first became intrigued with Alcatraz, what year was that?
1958. It was 58. I went to St. Ignatius to teach. And I was a seminarian, and part of our seminary training was to teach for a few years. So I taught at St. Ignatius for 3 years. I taught at Bellarmine for 1 year. So all told, four years I was teaching before I went on to theology studies and became ordained a priest. And so the chaplain of Alcatraz, Father Jim Tupi, used to come out to Alcatraz every week, and I was curious. I mean, it is just as bad today as it was then, only then it was a prison. And so in the middle of San Francisco Bay, you got Alcatraz functioning as a prison with all these people out there who were notorious criminals in the United States, you know, like FBI's most wanted and all that kind of stuff. And so it was an object of curiosity, but nobody could ever get out there and even get a boat close to the island. When I was with the prisoners, I felt very secure. In fact, I even felt protected because I was the only person who could get in there from the outside. Got a free range out in the yard. I was the only free range in the yard, which made the guards on the wall very nervous.
I bet.
The only people they ever saw were guards or prisoners.
So you really were the exception. You were rare anomaly.
For 4 years, I was an anomaly. I was an exception. And when I went there, they enjoyed my being in the yard. I'd walk around, talk to them, socialize, you know, give them cigarettes, you know, and stuff. And stuff that you couldn't even do today in any prison. They'd never allow that.
What a rare entree. How did you work it where you could become a coming and going prisoner, basically?
Well, what happened was the chaplain, Jim Tupi, came and went as a priest, as the chaplain of Alcatraz, officially, and he was paid by the government. So I asked if I could go out there with him, just, you know, visit the place. Well, he asked the warden, because he had to have permission from the warden. Well, the warden was Paul Madigan. Paul Madigan was an Irish Catholic, very devout, you know, regular communicant. So I think he probably figured that a Catholic seminarian is not going to do his prisoners any harm. So he gave permission for me to come out there with Jim Tupi. And so I did. I went out there with him, and then Father Tupi said Mass. And then I went out in the yard and socialized with the guys in the yard. There's 150, 175 prisoners all out there, you know, on Sunday, circulating around, and some playing softball and some handball and some, you know, lifting weights and playing cards and that kind of stuff that they did out there. And I just went out and just circulated and talked to them.
And did they become friends with you?
Very close. Some of them became very, very close friends.
So they would want to talk with you?
Yes.
Seek you out?
So they would seek me out. I would seek them out. And over the 4 years, I probably met, I would say, almost every man out there. Just to say hi or hello, how are you? But some I got really close to and some I became quite good friends with. Others not so much.
Were there any most memorable cons that you became friends with?
Yeah, there was one man out there who was one of the worst criminals at Alcatraz, and he and I became best friends. Through a whole set of strange circumstances, he got paroled out of Leavenworth after they closed Alcatraz, and he came to my ordination in San Francisco, which we had been talking about for years, that I was going to help him escape and be there. He got paroled 2 weeks before my ordination, came from Chicago, where he was a famous bank robber, came from Chicago to San Francisco, and he was at my ordination. He'd only been out of prison 2 weeks. And we had to get permission from the Attorney General of the United States for him to come to California out of his parole area in Chicago. And then he went back to Chicago, and he was killed in an auto accident 3 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
So he was only out of prison for a month. And the only thing he did was come to my ordination, what we had talked about all that time.
Oh, powerful.
And he crocheted an alb for me in his cell at Alcatraz. He designed it and crocheted it. It took a year of work for him to make that. And it was a vestment that I was ordained in, and I still have it. And when I go to Alcatraz and give talks, I show people this piece of, it's really a piece of art that he did in his cell that he gave to me for my ordination as a present from him. And he said, I'll give you something to remember me and the boys by. And I've still got it with me 50 years later.
That was pretty cool.
And that was almost exactly 50 years ago. It was June 1965 that I was ordained, and this is 2015.
You said earlier you did not come out there expressly to minister.
No.
Purely as a human being.
Just as a human being, and I hung around in the yard, talked to guys as human beings. I didn't care what they did or didn't do. Some of them were famous enough that I knew who they were ahead of time, you know, like when Mickey Cohen went out there. I mean, I'd already heard about Mickey Cohen.
Did you recognize him?
I recognized him, and I introduced myself to him, and several times I talked to him. But, you know, Mickey Cohen was a kind of a funny guy. You know, his girlfriend's name was Candy Barr. You know? And Tempest Storm. He had two girlfriends, Tempest Storm and Candy Barr.
Oh,
now, that
funny.
Was Mickey Cohen. But he was a funny guy. He was a kind of a obsessive, compulsive guy. He didn't like it out there very much.
Any other characters that you met? I know the Birdman.
Birdman was very surly and not very friendly and not fun to talk to at all. I was very close friends with Frankie Carbo, who was a member of Murder Incorporated and a hitman for one of the mafia families in New York. And when I went to Toronto for theology, he gave me some families to look up in Washington and in New York and in Toronto. So I met some of the mafia families on my way to theology who were friends of Frankie's. And he says, you know, stop in and say hello to my friends in Washington. He gave me some names, you know. So I called these people. I said, oh, Frankie, how's Frankie? You know, you bring all that kind of thing, you know. So I fringed on the mafia at one point because of Frankie. But he and I corresponded after they closed Alcatraz for quite a while. And then he eventually ended up down in Florida and died. And I knew Alvin Karpis.
And was he Creepy Karpis?
Well, that's what they nicknamed him.
Feel creepy to you or no?
No, he didn't feel creepy at all. Not to me, anyway. He was an old man. He was about 80 years old, I think. He'd been out there, I think he all told, he was there 27 years or something in Alcatraz. He was the longest prisoner there. He was there almost as long as Alcatraz was there.
So he was one of the originals.
One of the originals, yeah. And Ralph Miranda was out there. He was one of the Puerto Ricans that shot up Congress. There was a whole gang of Puerto Rican nationalists that shot up Congress, and they all got sent to federal prisons for that. They wounded some of the congressmen. Sam Rayburn said that, you know, that these guys would never get out of prison as long as he was alive. I'm trying to think of who all else. There's a lot of them were characters, you know, like they were bank robbers and kidnappers and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know, I wasn't paying that much attention to that part of their life, you know. They were mostly just people.
Right, they're out of context.
Yeah. Now you're asking me about which ones were famous, and so I'm trying to think of which ones are famous. But they weren't necessarily the ones I knew the best, you know, or that I was the closest to.
And so what brings you back today in the year 2015?
Well, what brings me back is, first of all, it's invitation, because it's a homecoming and reunion, and I'm part of the... You know, considered to be part of the staff of the place, because all the chaplaincy service, all the chaplains are dead. So I'm the only connection to the religious dimension of Alcatraz. So I'm invited back by the Park Service. And maybe even more importantly than that, I'm a celebrity. And that's the only place I'm a celebrity, is at Alcatraz. And everybody likes to be a celebrity someplace, you know. I mean, down at the retreat house and where I live, I'm not a celebrity. I'm just another one of the guys. But out here, I'm famous.
That's really cool. So anytime you need your dose of fame.
Yeah, it's good for my ego, you know.
Need a little recharge.
Yeah, need a little recharge.
Go back to jail.
Yeah, go back to jail. You know, you come out here and you're wearing a sign around your neck and people ask you questions. And, you know, what was it like when it was a prison? And now they say there's probably, I don't know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 people now who are still alive that the Park Service is in touch with who are on the inside when it was a prison. Now, there's a lot of families and a lot of, you know, relatives and children and grandchildren and all kinds of that sort of thing. Families who lived on the island, but of people who actually were on the inside, had face-to-face and direct contact with the convicts, there's only a few people left alive.
In ex-cons, I think there's less than five, maybe.
Yeah,
right?
That's about right. Maybe five or so. There are probably a few more than that, but they don't know who they are or where they are. People like Whitey Bulger, you know, he was out there, but he's in prison now down in Florida, so... You know, he's not going anywhere. He was on the run for a long time.
Well, Father Bush, thank you so much for sharing. What an honor.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you, too. And I hope that this might be interesting to some folks that you will be playing this for.
Most definitely. Thank you.
Okay, great. Take care. Yeah. All right, God bless you and all your listeners.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
I'm Kennedy Hamilton, Arizona.
Okay, boys. It's after midnight here in London. People are dancing on the rooftop and fireworks are exploding in all directions.
This is the happiest day of my life.
75 years ago, World War II ended. It was the deadliest military conflict in history, resulting in 85 million casualties. We mark the anniversary of the end of that war by celebrating the heroism of our greatest generation, those who served and those who supported their efforts at home. On September 2nd, we will commemorate the signing of the Articles of Surrender aboard the battleship Missouri Memorial at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. A celebration of the peace that followed. Salute their service, honor their hope. Join us virtually for the events on September 2nd, 2020. For further information, go to 75thww2commemoration.org.
This, ladies and gentlemen, is the end of the Second World War.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.